All right, and a good morning and welcome to this session on the last day of the conference. It's been a good week. Yeah? How's the food been? Okay, I can tell you I do lots of major Microsoft events and the food is always the best here in New Zealand. Azure Machine Learning, from design to integration. If I was scheduling at this event, this would have been a Wednesday session, the first day, because I see this as a really great primer that shows you, in particular, if you're new to machine learning and Azure Machine Learning, how it has been designed to work from beginning to end, right through to the integration story. Here we are on the last day. I'm interested to know if anyone today is already working with machine learning, be it Microsoft's Azure Machine Learning or other products or platforms. Okay, we have 1 or 2.5 hands going up. Does that mean that I have no data scientists in the room? Would they be brave enough to show themselves through raised hand? Okay, all right, that's perfectly fine. As I will explain during this 60-minute session, very brief introduction, my name is Peter Myers. I'm an independent BI expert, come all the way from Melbourne. Have worked for many, many years with Microsoft, evolving with their data platform, and data mining and machine learning don't escape my attention or their use in solutions that I design or support. What we're here to achieve in this 60-minute session then is a real primer. What is machine learning? How would we manage the life cycle of a machine learning project? And to demonstrate end-to-end how this could be achieved. Now, interesting that historically, you know, man's always had a need to know what is likely to happen. Is there a tiger waiting around the corner for me? In the business world, we might see business people consulting with clairvoyance. Do you think that this is an appropriate way to plan or predict what could be in your business? What do you think? Some presidents have apparently consulted clairvoyance to assist them with war strategy. Not sure that that would be appropriate. Maybe this approach when it comes to predicting, but try convincing your IT manager that you need to install an aquarium of octopi to help support the predictive requirements of your business. We're here to talk about a more scientific approach to prediction, and that is machine learning. The trusty definition of Wikipedia tells us that it's a subfield of computer science and statistics that deals with the construction and study of systems that can learn from data rather than follow only explicitly programmed instructions. Let me explain. We have a problem. We need to add two numbers together. So we consult with a developer, and they decide that we need a function that passes in two numbers, number one and number two. And using C#, they decide this is the appropriate solution. Would you disagree? Fairly standard approach to solving that type of problem. Now, if the problem was different, that I now need to predict customer profitability, and we discuss the need for a function whereby we could pass in demographic attributes of a customer, and then we start to develop something in C#, what would the lines of code look like? Would anyone attempt to start writing this type of algorithm? I would hope not. This is not a problem to be solved through programming logic. In fact, it's a problem to be solved by preparing good quality data that represents your customers' rich demographic data, a result of what profit they have produced for you, perhaps in the last 12 months, using some algorithm to detect patterns from that, and then to be able to use that to support predictions. This is machine learning and the topic that I have to share with you this morning. So the flow works something like this. Like in any good project, you need to have a well-defined objective. Moving forward, you need to collect some good quality and good representative volumes of data. You need to prepare that because we're all familiar with the garbage in, garbage out. In particular, applies here. If you're happy with garbage predictions, by all means, use garbage prepared data. At this point, we move to the more exciting part about training models. By the choice of an algorithm, by the choice of inputs and outputs and tuning parameters, we typically produce more than one model, looking for the most optimal, the most accurate predictor. And upon evaluating that, we then deploy that. And then it becomes a production resource against which we can query. And then your IT people are going to monitor and manage this to ensure it's doing what it needs to do optimally. And then your developers have the ability to integrate this into some type of solution. Let's talk briefly about the roles. Commonly, when we talk about data mining and machine learning, the data scientist pops up. So let's just acquaint ourselves with the definition here that these people are highly skilled people, they're highly educated, and therefore they're highly paid. That makes sense. All right, so you'll find that there's a worldwide shortage of these people today. So if you're looking for a fail-safe career, we'd recommend that you take a look at becoming a data scientist. The other professional, and perhaps what represents most of the audience before me this morning, is the data professional, someone that's skilled with working with data and solving classic data challenges. So we might refer to these as DBAs, database developers, BI developers. I'd also introduce the role of a software developer who builds applications and may also choose to use machine learning to enhance application experiences with predictive capabilities. So this session is talking to all audiences today. If you fit into one of these, then you're certainly in the right session. The challenges with machine learning then today include that it's very, very expensive from a hardware, software perspective, from the skills that drive this. So commonly there's barriers to entry that it's larger organizations that can invest and expect some return off that investment. Data might be isolated, so a challenge then could be, how do we bring it all together? Well-prepared data. The more data you can integrate from different subject areas, the richer and more interesting, and perhaps the more stable, therefore more accurate, will be the prediction capabilities generated from your models. Tool chaos. Well, today with classic data mining and machine learning solutions, there's not just one tool that does everything. So you need to be skilled across multiple tools that might prepare data, move it to a whole new system to then start training, maybe a different system to evaluate. And then, how do we real-time integrate this with an application? There are enormous challenges, especially with the major products out there today. And complexity comes into all of this. So there are enormous challenges is the upfront message we have. Let's come back and take a look at what Microsoft's offering will be later in this session. So now with an introduction to Microsoft's more recent cloud-based predictive service, Azure Machine Learning, this is all about predictive analytics in the cloud, enabling professionals such as yourself to, with relative ease, build, deploy, and share advanced analytics solutions. The cool upfront message, and this will be well supported in my demos, is that you only need to be armed with a web browser and internet connectivity. No need to install expensive hardware or software with licenses. And you can potentially do this with for free. Available today, there is a free license offer with Azure Machine Learning. It retains a practically unlimited number of files. It uses Azure Storage. So the data that you prepare and the metadata that describes your solutions is all up there in the cloud. And you can access other services like HD Insight, Azure SQL databases, and virtual machines, whereby that is where your data resides and the machine learning will take place from those cloud sources. So how does it work? There's an Azure portal. Your Azure Ops team may well provision a machine learning service. The data professionals and data scientists will work in the web browser with ML Studio. They will drag, drop, connect, configure to then produce and publish their data mining solutions, or machine learning rather. By the way, I see the words as interchangeable. Data mining is sort of like an older way of referring to it. Machine learning is sort of a newer way. We could get into semantics and argue that they're subtly different, but ultimately they're there to achieve the same outcome. Take data, detect patterns, and typically use them for predictive scenarios. Last story is that there's an API service that will expose your experiments as web services. And then it just becomes a classic developer activity to connect to, issue a web request, and then handle a response in return. Let me switch then into the first demonstration. So wearing the hat of the Azure Ops team, they'll go ahead and provision a machine learning workspace. So as simple as this, I'm going to call this, Ignite NZ. That one seems to be free. We have three locations today where machine learning is supported. So the closest to us will be Southeast Asia. And then it also needs Azure Storage for its data and metadata. Okay, somebody has that one. I would prefer that they both have the same name. And then right up there in the cloud, we're having a workspace created, as simple as that. The next step would be to go ahead and grant permissions to the appropriate people within the organization that can collaborate and work together within that workspace. So the remainder of this session then is to work through that life cycle to solve a particular problem. Let's start by defining an objective. Of course, it's important in any project, And so I've chosen the topic of predicting customer profitability. And to provide a little bit more detail, the context would be that we're looking to deliver targeted display advertising on our e-commerce website. This would be to present relevant product suggestions with the aim of increasing sales and therefore profitability. With that objective in mind, we'll move to the next stage, which is collecting data. So it's very, very important that you have sufficient volumes of representative, up-to-date, clean data. Your data can come from internal, external, different formats, and the more data you can combine, the richer you make your data sets, and the more likely, the more interesting and reliable the predictions will be. So in the second demonstration, let me introduce you to the data. And keeping this reasonably simplistic in a 60-minute session, there's only so much I can achieve. What I have here is customer profit CSV file. Let me open it up in Excel. And the easiest thing to do would be just make this into an Excel table. Just take a glance at the column headers. We've got here 10,000 customers, first name, last name, and lots of interesting details about each. Age, marital status. Look at the already prepared data here, the yearly income rather than a continuous range. We've got buckets of 25,000. Got number of kids at home, et cetera, et cetera. It's the last column where we see profit generated. So essentially this set has come from two tables in the data warehouse. My customer dimension joined to sales history. Here's the profit for the last 12 months generated by each of these customers. And I'm satisfied that this is good, clean, representative data that's going to help me determine the profit class of each customer. Or of new customers. Moving to the next stage, how would we prepare this? Well, it's already been prepared in some sense. We've joined two sets of data together. We've got a rough result coming out of a system. Be aware that you do typically spend good time here ensuring that your data is of the highest and best possible quality. And that might mean cleansing, reducing, reformatting, identifying abnormal data. Depending on what you're trying to solve, you might oversample that because we're trying to detect fraud. Let's exaggerate it within the data. But if it's going to skew results, we're going to isolate it and remove it. Missing values, we could substitute them with constants, or we could use other mining projects to help better predict and fill in to complete this data set. Categorize continuous values like income into $25,000 ranges, or normalize continuous values into a range between 0 and 1. And of course, having the required data to begin with is really, really important. So how dissatisfying would it be to go to my customer dimension to find all I have is first name, last name, and email address? Is there going to be a lot of value mining that? Probably not. So a message to developers today that when you're designing solutions like an e-commerce application today, within legal boundaries, be as descriptive as you can about defining who your customer is, that when they register to check out something from the shopping cart, you're going to ask them questions. Where do they come from? How much money do they earn? Are they married? Is this creepy? Maybe. Okay. Please avoid what we refer to as the Afghanistani accountant problem. And no, I'm not being racist or isolating a particular country. But if you think about it, if you have defaults, which country do you come from? And Afghanistan is the first and the default. What profession are you? Accountant is the first and the default. You're likely to end up with a lot of data that you're going to have to remove because it will skew the results. All right, taking my demonstration to the next step. Profit generated is a continuous numeric value. Now I'm going to choose to use an amazing tool built into Excel or available today as an add-in, and that's Power Query. I'm going to do a simple transformation that is going to categorize the profit generated into four classes. It's either very low, low, medium, or high. And that's what I'm going to ask my machine learning model to predict, one of those four classes. So I simply come into transform, or rather add column. I'm going to add a new column called profit generated class. If the profit generated is less than 500, or rather less than 100, then I'm going to call this very low. Else if profit generated is less than 500, then low. Else if less than 1500, and yeah, I see the typo. And anything else we'll disregard as high profit. Of course, you could do this in the tool of your choice. And we could see here then, if I just go ahead and transform by, let's just do a group by. Just as a glance, we can see the distribution of results across the 10,000. And that seems reasonable based on the business that we run. So when I close and load, it loads the transform result back into Excel. And I'm simply going to go ahead and file save as back to my assets folder, but as a CSV document. So I'm going to call this customer profit prepared. And I can close the Excel workbook. So that's my preparation. In reality, you're likely to spend significant time. What does that mean? It could mean weeks or even months getting the right sets of data, joining, substituting missing values, et cetera, et cetera. Stage two will be, now that we have a workspace and that we can hand this off to the data professional, they can access this by signing into ML Studio. Remember, armed with nothing but a web browser and internet connectivity, they can upload data sets. So if you're going to work with local on-premises data, it eventually has to be in the cloud. And one approach, in particular for smaller sets of data, is that you can upload the data sets direct to the service. Thank you. Yes. You have overstayed your welcome. Please disappear. All right, we might try. Only in demonstration time. In front of a larger audience, by the way, I don't need a machine learning project to tell me that the larger the audience in front of you, the more likely that something like this will happen. Recover web page. Trichrome is the suggestion. Would you believe I don't have it installed? Ah, goodness me. All right. Seriously? What was I saying? Armed with nothing but a web browser and good internet connectivity. Let's take a second go at this. So returning to machine learning, open up the workspace, sign into ML Studio. That's what I'm expecting to see. All right, left-hand side, data sets. There are currently none in the workspace. As we'd expect, I'm going to upload a local file. And there's my prepared data. As simple and straightforward as that. All right, that completes the demonstration on preparing the data for machine learning. So that involved also uploading a local file to the service. Moving then to the more involved part of training and evaluation. To me, these belong together because you're going to find that it's an iterative process. We don't just train one model, we might in fact train dozens of them using different sets of data, different filtered sets, different input columns, different algorithms, different tuning parameters, ultimately to arrive at the most reliable, accurate, and useful result. Okay, so model evaluation is critical, and we will determine this through accuracy, reliability, and usefulness testing. Let's take a look at how I can achieve this in demonstration. And aptly, we refer to it as experimentation. So first of all, we can confirm that we have a data set uploaded. That looks great. So now I can begin to perform experiments. And so I'll go ahead and create a new experiment. And when I do, a whole gallery pops up. So if you are new to the concept of machine learning, and perhaps you can find within the gallery something that closely matches the problem that you're there to solve with your own data, there's a great starting point. So there's an entire community around producing libraries of resources for reuse. Today, I'll be working with a blank experiment. And the first thing you do, and it's not obvious, but up here is the experiment name. So it's going to be to predict customer profit class. And what you see here is a blank canvas whereby I can drag, drop, connect, configure to experiment with the data. Save data sets shows me that here under my data sets that I have the customer profit prepared. The other alternative is that I could use a reader, and the reader would allow me to bring in data from any web URL, a Hive query, so that it'd be big data querying, SQL Azure database, Azure storage. All right, as I've uploaded data, I won't be using that approach. Let me drag and drop customer profit prepared. And a right click here on the output node would allow me to visualize. And then I can look at things like customer ID and learn that it's pretty much unique. Number of children at home, I learned that there are in fact almost half the data is missing values. All right, so that's going to be problematic. So while you can clean up your data here within the studio, my recommendation would be clean it up closer to the source. If you're working on premises, use tools like SQL Server Integration Services, Power Query to do the cleansing. Yet there are dozens of modules available to you to perform the cleansing here within the experiment itself. So something I've identified here is that the missing values of number of children at home is going to involve our attention. All right, next thing will be then to project columns. So note, if you type the name in here, if you know what it is, you can quickly isolate it. Otherwise, you could have drilled down through data transformation, manipulation, and found it. First thing I'm going to do is use this to eliminate columns that aren't of interest. So by launching the column selector here, let's begin with all columns, and we'll exclude columns by name. So customer ID as a unique identifier isn't going to provide much value, likely not provide much value when mining. Likewise with first name and last name, yes, we could have the argument that we could derive other information from these. In the absence of having gender data, we could use lookups to actually derive gender, but we do have it in this case. What else I'll drop will be the number of children at home, because we're missing half the data, it's not providing a lot of strength. And also I will remove the profit generated. Next, because I know that I've got missing values, and I didn't point this out, but there are missing values in the other, the children at home. So in fact, there are only two that are missing. So how about we cleanse them up here? And I can cleanse them by simply saying, do a substitution and replace them with zero. All right, so I've arrived at the point where the data is now prepared and cleansed. I'm ready to start modeling. And a common technique that is used to scientifically evaluate whether a model is performing well is that we take our carefully prepared data, in this case 10,000 customers, and we split them into two sets. One set used for training, the other set used to test the accuracy of the predictions. So to help me do that, I simply look for a component that has the word split in it. So I will take that cleansed data and I'm going to split this using a 70% ratio. So from the left output, there will be 70% random cases, on the right side, 30%. Note that if you double click, you can comment. Let me put the 70% in here and you'll see that those comments then neatly show up within the modules. Now with my carefully prepared and split data, I'm ready to do some mining. So we take a look at the machine learning group here. The first one will be to initialize the model with an algorithm. So of all the groups, anomaly detection, classification, clustering, regression, what type of mining task am I doing here? Looking to predict a label. Are they very low, low, medium, or high? It's classification, right? As opposed to regression that we'll be looking to predict a continuous numeric value. What profit would they generate? So we can narrow the extraordinary number of algorithm choices down to the classification algorithms. And then we can also narrow it down quite quickly as well. If you look at the prefixes to each algorithm, it's either multi-class or two-class. What do you think it is here? Multi-class, right. So two-class would be, do they have the disease, yes or no? We're looking to predict that. Here, we're looking to predict across four. So I'm just going to choose the first here for multi-class, which is a decision forest. What I then need to do is train a model, drag it out, and then I'm going to connect the initialized model to the train model, and then I'm going to go ahead and score it. All right, so if we train the model with 70% of data, we use the reserved 30% to score it. It's no different to you at school when you did an exam. How well did you learn about mathematics? All right, so how well does this model do its prediction? With that reserved 30%, it can predict and compare to know what the profit class was and how often is it getting it right. It's a very, very good test for accuracy. Now, for the trained model, it's saying, hold on a minute, you haven't told me what column I'm using. What are we looking to predict? So I come in here and say it's the profit-generated class. And now I've configured an experiment that prepares, splits, trains, and evaluates how good that model works. Now what I'm going to do, just to make this a little more interesting, is side by side, come on, multi-select, copy, paste. That's what I'm looking for. Let's just copy in another train model and the score, and take that 70% of data and train the model, but this time using a different algorithm. Let's use a multi-class neural network. Now, for the data professional, it may not be so important that you know what a neural network is or what a decision forest is. Of course, you probably want more detail. Note that by clicking the module, you'll always be provided a more help link in the bottom right corner, and that takes you straight to the online documentation. Now, the reason that I say that you may not necessarily need to know how it works is that you should just in certain times be satisfied that it produces a verified testable result. All right, so we'll learn here that this algorithm has numerous parameters that you could use to tune. And the recommendation is that by default, they're usually good settings, but as part of your experimentation, you may choose to play with these. And if I increase this parameter value, does it in fact increase the accuracy that we can measure? All right, so I'm going to keep the default settings at this stage. The last thing I'm going to bring in is an evaluate. This allows me to compare two models side by side. So let's take the score of the left-hand side with the decision forest and compare it to the right-hand side with the neural network. So here through drag, drop, connect, configure, I have an experiment to train two models and then to determine which is the most accurate. Let me go ahead and run this. Now, this is the first time that something is now processing in the cloud service. We've used a desktop experience with a browser, drag, drop, connect through some amazing HTML5 designer experience, and now if you notice in the top right corner, it's running. It's using that data, it's looking for patterns, it's going to score them and then perform an evaluation. Let's see what happens. The cool thing is today with in-flight internet, you could be doing this on a flight between I don't know, does Air New Zealand have in-flight between Auckland and Sydney? No? Okay, well, in the US it works well. Between Seattle and New York, I could be doing this without the need to install, configure any hardware or any software. Can I change the neural network? If I want to tweak it, there's several things I could do here. I could select the current one and I could tweak its parameters, or I could delete it and I could substitute it in for another of the classification algorithms. All right, or what I'm likely to do is just bring in many, many, many. So I don't want to demonstrate that because A, I don't have time, but B, it scares people. You'll open up some of the experiments in the gallery and there's literally hundreds of modules. But then when you see the pattern that it's actually a repeat, many, many repetitions because there's many models. There could be up to a dozen or more models in that single experiment. All right, so looks like it's done its job. All looks good. If I do a right click here on the evaluate, we get a visualization that allows us to compare side by side, left-hand side with a decision forest, right-hand side with a neural network. And what I'm looking for here is what is the overall accuracy? We've achieved a 72% accuracy, and the matrix here tells us how often is it getting each of the classification predictions right. You don't need to be a data scientist to interpret this. So 72.6% for the decision forest. In comparison, we see an improved accuracy here with the neural network. All right, so for the case of keeping things simple, with the time constraints I have, we're going to arrive at the immediate decision that the second one, the neural network, is the one that we're satisfied to deploy into production. There I've demonstrated for you the process of experimentation. Publication. So in order to publish this, essentially what you're looking for is a web service that behaves as a function. Remember, my function is going to have as inputs demographic attributes. As an output, it's going to provide us a classification. This particular customer is a high profit generating customer. So we need to prepare the experiment for publication, and this involves more work within the experiment and then publishing to the web service. So let me go ahead and show you how this is going to happen. That's it. This is sort of the fun part. So when you've arrived at the decision that it is in fact this model here is the one that I would like to deploy. So watch this closely. When I go ahead and down here, I set up as a web service. No, I don't. I select this. I should have the option. I'm going to have to run this again. I should have a different feature highlighted there. Let me just run this again. I need to prepare this with a scoring experiment, and it's not giving me that option for some reason. Set up as a web service.
Will it work when you have multiple models?
Absolutely it will. So the whole deal here is that I'm selecting this model here, and I want to set this up as a web service. No, you definitely have to choose the model. So I'm a little confused. Which one are you suggesting? No. No, and I'm pretty sure it's actually the model. So I am a little confused. You know, I ran through this again last night, and let me tell you, this service changes frequently with improvements, and so you always have to make sure that they haven't moved something or renamed something. What I might do is just return. Let me just reload it. I want to be absolutely sure. Let me just reload the experiment. Okay, and when I select this model, you reckon I right click on this? Shouldn't have to. I did this last night and there was an option here that said set up scoring experiment. So I'm not sure why it's disappearing. What is the recommendation or suggestion I'm getting? Well, the scoring experiment should do that for me automatically. And this is the beautiful part. The animation here is amazing. Somebody has spent all this time, and I would love to show it to you. So if I save this as a trained model, that's fine, but it's The process that I'm describing to you is supposed to do this automatically.
How does it know which one you've chosen?
Well, because it's in focus. So there's that one, and then there's this one. What if I say predictive web service? Let's just see what happens. No, it's creating the web service, and it shouldn't. Oh, no. Okay, that's doing what I want it to do, but I swear, last night it was called something very different. And what it should have said was, you want to create a predictive experiment or a scoring experiment, and this is precisely what it's done. All right, so I'm back on track with the demo. What it's added is a new experiment, and we can toggle between the two. There it is. We now have an input. So when you call a web service, you need to pass something in. So think of that as the input parameters of a function, and then we have the ability to look at it from two perspectives, but we also have an output, and we can add more. There's now a trained model, and I don't want to run the experiment yet. So let me describe what's going on here. Here is the input, like a function call. We need to pass in demographic attributes. It then calls the project columns, and then it has transformed the scrubbing into a transform. So basically what it's doing is it's creating a reusable module that if you need to scrub and replace missing values, you can reuse this across other experiments, and then it uses an applied transformation for it. There is now a trained model of which we then can do scoring. So here's the thing, this isn't quite clear, but I need to make a couple of subtle changes from what it's done automatically. And the reason for that is that my project columns, when we're training an experiment, needs to know what the profit class was. But when we're performing a prediction, we don't. We don't need to pass in a profit class, we want it to pass it out. So I am going to modify the project columns to say, do not expect that the profit generated class will be passed in. Then I need to break this, and I need to tell it that the input will come straight into here. Now, likewise, when we look at the output, it's going to pass all of the data. I only want it to pass one thing, and that is the predicted score. So I'm going to pass in another project columns into here. So when it's done the scoring, I'm going to use this to eliminate everything except. So begin with no columns and include only the scored labels. And then that is what will be passed to the output. I'm also going to rename the input, but that's going to be called customer profile. And the output will be predict profit class. And assuming I've got this right, I go ahead and run. It validates that that design is workable. And essentially what I've now defined here is a function call that I'll publish as a web service. Question? So does it need the data there all the time? No. So now that we have a trained model, and the trained model you will see, where is it? Here. Every time you perform a prediction, you don't need to train the model. All right, you simply need to use the trained model that has used the data in the past. And that training, by the way, could take hours of time to arrive at a fully trained model. Predictions we want to happen sub-second. All right. So I need to work out what's going on here. I think. I think the problem is this. I want the applied transformations. The scoring side is fine. What I might do at risk, and I hope I don't upset this, I had this issue last night. So I have my standard demonstrations, and when I ran through them last night to make sure they work, it's changed the order in which it does things, and it took me a couple of minutes to work out what it did. But I found out the order here was that it needed to eliminate columns here first so that the input here would have the right columns. Let me just have a quick think about this. if I remove the transformation entirely, just to keep things on track, let me see what happens. I'm just conscious that I have 20 more minutes to get through this demo. All right, and once it gets to run through this, we can then start to publish it. All right, so the next phase will be, this will be published as a web service, and then your IT and your Azure Ops team might be then responsible for managing this and monitoring that it's all working as you'd plan. So let me show you then that I've come back to the experiment, and we can see that it's finished running, so it's validated the design works. And then I'm going to deploy this as a web service. And so it has managed to deploy the service. And it's giving us information here that you have the key, which is used for authentication. And there are, in fact, two different services available. You have the response request, which is for synchronous real-time predictions. You also have a batching mode as well. What I'm going to do is demonstrate from the Azure Ops team perspective that they can manage the web services. So it might be the data professionals and the data scientists that publish them, but it well could be the Azure Ops team that will be here monitoring, but also managing the scale. And I like to point out here that when you configure an endpoint, and you may have multiple endpoints for scalability, you can achieve up to just short of 5,000 predictions a second. That is the service level that is being offered here. All right, so that's the monitoring. There's also a story that your experiments and your services can be published to the Azure Marketplace and you can monetize them. So if you've got some valuable data and you can add some value by creating prediction services on top of this, you can sell it all through this infrastructure. All right, so that was managing the web service. The last topic, and the more involved one, is how can you integrate this within an application experience? And I've just pointed out to you that when you publish, you get navigated across to a page that shows you that there are, in fact, two services, the request response and the batch. Ultimately, what it comes down to is that a developer, providing their application has internet connectivity, that it's got support for SSL, and you've got the OData endpoints and API key and the ability to parse JSON, then you've got everything you need to embed predictive capabilities into your application. Let's take a look at this in demonstration. So here I am back at the page that represents the service. I can show you here with a test button that there is an ability to just do a test by passing in things like age, marital status, and so on. All right, and that sort of proves that the interface we've defined is working. We eliminated that customer ID, first name, last name are removed. We also eliminated the need to actually pass in the profit class, because of course, that's what we're looking to have passed out. So with a focus on the request response, here is the complete documentation that you could pass off to a developer that has web programming skills. Here is the endpoint to the service. Here's all the details about what the request header will need to look like. There's the JSON template, and the response is going to deliver JSON like this. And then you have code here in C#, Python, and R. So what I'm going to do is take all of the C code and copy it. And I'm going to switch across to a Visual Studio application here that's really a test application to show how we could integrate this into a web application. So let me go ahead and just increase the size here. Simple. Of course, in a real e-commerce application, you're not going to ask them these details. It would be a lookup against the currently authenticated user. All right, so I'm switching into developer mode now. And here I'll show you that the web page has a method called submitClick. And essentially what it does upon validating that you've got all of the details of the customer profile, it creates an object of type customer profile, passes in all of the values from the controls. And we're at this point here, we want to take that data and pass it to the service and have it predict what type of profit. Very low, low, medium, or high. The result of this will be in the web application that we have images, and I've kept it very simple intentionally. We have 4 prophet classes and 2 genders. So there's 8 possible images based on your gender and prophet class. We're going to show you a particular advert that would be appropriate for your spending levels. All right, so I'm going to have to add an entirely new class to the project, and that would be Azure Machine Learning. And remember how I copied all of this. I'm going to use this as a starting point. Just paste it all in. But be aware that that copy and paste is for a console application. It wasn't designed for a web application. And the first thing that we'd notice here is that there are some missing references. And in fact, the comments up here say that you need to install a package from NuGet. So let's go ahead and copy this. And tools, NuGet console, and paste it in. And you'll see here under the project references that there'll be 3 references added. So Newtonsoft JSON to parse JSON documents, and some HTTP modules as we see here. These 2. So I can now remove the comments. It's got the libraries of what it needs. I'm going to add an additional using in here because I know that I need to do some JSON parsing. Let me bring this namespace into scope. And then the name of the namespace would be better if we called it Test Profit Class Prediction, because that's the namespace in which the web application has been developed. The first thing we see here is the definition of a class. This represents like rows and columns. So it's simply an object that allows us to bring together the inputs required to pass into the service. Next, we have a class called Program. I'm going to rename this. Remember, it was a console application. This is my now Azure Machine Learning class. And then because it was a console application, its entry point was a main method. I don't need that. I remove it. Next, and it's using a multi-threaded design. So it's looking to process commands asynchronously. Don't need that when you're rendering a page on a web server. So I'm going to rename this to become a public static method that returns a string. We'll name it the Predict Customer Profit class, whereby we pass in the profile of a customer, and it's going to return a string describing the profit generated. What follows then is it's setting up the request. Essentially, it needs to send a JSON document that describes the request, and the web developer can be guided by the fact that there's a template. That's what the request needs to look like. Here you'll see all of the inputs required. I'm simply going to replace this line with my snippet number 2, and essentially what it's passing in is all of the properties of my customer profile that was passed in up here. What follows next is to authenticate with the service, it needs to know your unique key for that web service. Switching back. I copy this to the clipboard, and I just paste it in. Of course, you would put that in a config file. Anybody that has that key then has the ability to work with the service. And then you'll see the base address is the complete URL endpoint to your web service. So essentially what's been developed is the request object that needs to be made against Azure Machine Learning API service. I'm going to remove the await keyword here and switch this to the result. So I'm not a multi-threaded programming developer. I just know that because this is all going to render on a server, I don't really need to work with multi-threaded design. So I have been guided by colleagues that say this would be an appropriate approach. All right, that is getting the request up to the service. What is going to come back, all going well, is a response. So let's start to work with the response. And the first thing that the template code does here is determine that it's been a successful request. So up front, what I'm going to do is replace all of the code here that if it isn't a success, we're just going to simply return the word error. And now let's focus on what it is required to deal with the response. So first of all, I'm going to change the variable because what comes back is a JSON document that describes the prediction. And now in this variable, I have a string that is that JSON document. What does it look like? Let's consult the documentation. the response that comes back will look exactly like that. So it is, in fact, a string, but it's very painful for a developer then to parse this string, trying to find a particular value in there that in this case would be right here. All right, so what I'm going to do is copy this, return to the project, and then I can edit, paste special, paste as JSON classes. So what it's done is it's taken that template and it's provided me a series of classes that I can work with programmatically. Let's make that look a little nicer. But also, root object isn't terribly descriptive. RRS response object is really what this represents. And also, I could make these private. I don't need the rest of the application to even see these. I would regard them as helper classes. So in fact, I will select them all. And I think we can surround with. So there's the helper classes that will help me work with that JSON response. So there's the line of code. Go ahead. What did I call it? RS response. That's the name of the class that represents the response coming back. Go ahead and take that string and make it into objects that I can programmatically work with. And now I'm arrived at the point where I can return from the response body. Take a look at this. We have results. Within results, we have the predict profit class. Within it, we have a value. Within it, we have values. And if I take the first row, first column, that is the string that I'm looking for. Okay, if you take a quick glance at that structure, you'll find it here. Within results, we have a value. We have values, first row, first column. There is the code required to interact, send up a request, bring back a response. And now when I come back to my default page, instead of saying that I want to do, I just say go to my Azure Machine Learning namespace, go to the predict customer profit class, pass in the profile, it returns a string, and it's now stored here. The rest of it simply is display that on the page and choose the appropriate image. And I think we're now ready to test it. What do you think? All right, let's imagine that a customer browsing our website happens to be a 45-year-old male that is married, that has high income, two kids, still living at home, graduate degree, works in management, owns a home, lives 5 to 10 kilometers. Submit, fingers crossed, communicates with the service, brings back a string, and renders it into the web page. All right. Thank you. But let's continue to explore. Perhaps they're not as well educated and employed, they're earning less money. Would that matter? And according to the service, that person's likely to generate a profit that isn't high, but is. Still thinking about it. What did I mention? 4,800 predictions a second can be achieved. All right, for someone that meets that criteria, according to the history of data that we have, your spending levels are likely around this level. It's still red, it's still sexy, but two wheels instead of four. All right, let's continue to explore. How about someone in a clerical role with high school education, earning a lower income, perhaps with no kids? I have no idea why that's so slow. All right, it's still red, still has two wheels. Let's continue and find out that if we went to, you know, perhaps a 16-year-old single guy earning lowest income, partial high school manual, no home. Still low? Hmm. I'm getting some very, very slow responses here. This isn't so usual. So don't judge this service on, oh my goodness, it's going to take 10 minutes to predict one customer. Did I want them as, yeah, there you go. What happens if they're not a homeowner? I want to see very low. Boy, what else can we do to drag this guy down? Lives closer to home? Give them lots of children. That's what I'm looking for. All right, it's still red. You get three wheels though. Do you think it might change if it's female? Do you think purchasing patterns changed based on gender? They most certainly do. All right, let's wrap up then with a summary. Business scenarios and what we're here to describe to you is that machine learning, as a popular field and discipline within computer science, but often feared by developers, the message here today is that machine learning has in fact two disciplines. There's machine learning where you're going to be involved in the nuts and bolts and the mathematics and statistics that go behind it, and yes, you'll need to be a data scientist to work with that. But there's also applied data scientists, applied machine learning, as I've demonstrated to you today, that a data professional or a developer can work relatively easy with this cloud service. I don't need to know what a neural network is or how it works. I just need to be convinced that it produces a value add to my data. And I've tested that through scoring and evaluation. I can see a 72 or 77% accuracy on prediction. Why wouldn't I want to use that somehow in an application? All right, so machine learning from applied perspective is in reach for you today. So imagine the potential. I've demonstrated ad targeting, but churn analysis, who's likely to leave you? Do you know it's more expensive to find a new customer than to retain your existing customers? Detect who they are. Offer them an incentive to renew. Image detection, classification, equipment monitoring, huge, huge area to minimize costs. Why do we maintain equipment that doesn't need to be maintained? And why do we have production lines go down because equipment was about to fail and we didn't know about it? So IoT and machine learning go hand in hand with the potential to reduce millions of dollars in unnecessary maintenance and downtime. Recommendation engines, people that buy this with that, forecasting, spam filtering, fraud detection, anomaly detection. So in summary, what I've demonstrated to you and described to you with Azure Machine Learning is that you have a cloud-based predictive service. You can provision workspaces with relative ease and at no cost for personal experiences. Machine Learning Studio allows you in a web browser to drag, drop, connect, configure, and you may work against data that's in the cloud, big data, Azure SQL databases, virtual machines, or local data that's been uploaded. When you publish your experiment as a service, then it opens up the world of potential. Anything that has internet connectivity that can authenticate, work with SSL and JSON, can consume and embed predictive results into their experiences. All right, so what Microsoft offers is cloud-based machine learning, faster towards solutions, world-class, best-in-class algorithms available to you through drag-drop, and you only pay for what you use. The more scale you need, the more you pay for that. Basically, you're paying for the processing time of your experiment and the number of predictions, and it's all well-described transparently on the Azure pricing website. In summary, you've learned that machine learning is a subfield of computer science and statistics that deals with the construction and study of systems that will learn from data. The key attributes of Azure machine learning is that it's fully managed. Don't need to install anything. It's integrated with drag, drop, connect, and configure, best-in-class algorithms. I haven't described this, but R and Python can be embedded as well. If you have investments in these, you can quickly surface your R solutions as web services within minutes. And then you can deploy also within minutes and even operationalize and make money through the marketplace. This is a service that I believe is now approachable to developers. Wrapping up with resources, fair number of resources here, including the pricing is well worth having a look at. I don't have enough time to go through that with you right now. Take a look at the gallery. Maybe that someone's produced a solution that's very like the one you need to produce, so start learning from it today. There's only one book that I found more recently, so that was a good read that provided a chapter for specific case studies, and I found that very, very informative. And lastly, if you don't believe anything that I say or you're not trusting in machine learning, Paul the Octopus and his website's available here at Wikipedia, although sadly, I think he passed away a couple of years ago. All right, classic Microsoft resources. I'll leave you to search those on your own time. Please take the time to submit an evaluation. We find that very useful to know what your thoughts were and how we can improve experiences for the future. I will then thank you for your time and attendance and for attending this session. Thank you.